Okay.
Come on, Blimer.
Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up the world, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Gain new knowledge, get a fresh new start. They never will bring you there. So let's talk about it. Well, I and on the air.
This is MJ Network, and I am your host, Fran Lewis, and I am totally pumped and excited that Vincent Zandri is here, and we're going to talk about Young Chase Baker, The Cost of the Last Crusade. And I have to tell you, everybody, that I've got five teenagers in this building that have their hands out already for this. Seriously. So, an ancient solid gold cross has been buried seemingly forever, and only young Chase Baker, if he's so cool, is brave enough to dig it back. But in this short novel, he teams up with two guys that I absolutely fell in love with. Twiggs, I think he's great, and the combative Bailey, who's so much like, guess who, me. So, Chase is urging the three embark on a late-night quest to uncover the cost of the Last Crusade, which is said to have been buried with the body of an old Frenchman. Oh, my God. Learn more as about now. So, hi, how you doing? And this is exciting. This book was fantastic.
Hi, Fran.
I read it in. Hi. So,
hi.
And the good part is it has large print, which made me even happier.
Yeah. Yeah,
so, what is it?
How did I come up? You'll have to excuse me if I'm, like, off, because I just got back from Europe, but...
That's okay.
Yeah, so, like, well, Chase Baker, you know, like, that series does really well for me, you know? And much like the young Indiana Jones adventures, I was thinking, I wonder if I could expand my audience a little bit by writing a YA version of this, and we'll explore what Chase was like as a kid. And, you know, so I've never done it before. Like, last year was, like, the big experiment year for me. Like, I tried, like, a bunch of new genres and stuff like that. And one of them was YA. And so, again, like, you know, it's like writing into the dark. Like, you have no idea if you can even do this. And, so I started in and transported Chase back to 1979, like, and I got to introduce, like, his dad and stuff, you know, like, his father, who was, like, an excavator and stuff like that, and I was able to draw on, like, you know, my old construction background from all those years ago and brought in some of those old people, and then for his sidekicks, Bailey and Twiggs, those were actually my best friends back in, in junior high. That's them. The real guy's name is Daly, but I changed it to Bailey. But Twiggs, while I was writing this book, and this is sad, but while I was writing this book, the real Twiggs was dying of cancer. So I tried my best to get it done before he died so that he would see it. And he died like 2 days before it was released. So it was kind of sad. But at least his family's read it and stuff like that. And they love it. And that's him. I mean, that is like right down to a T in the book. You know, like just I was able to nail it, I think, just because, I had been so close to him for so long.
Yeah.
It was
so real.
Yeah, and even the character of Monique is based on this other girl who we went to junior high with, who had also sort of a French name, and, like, we all liked her and stuff like that. And you know how it is in junior high. I don't even know if it's still like that in junior high. But when I was in junior high, if a girl liked you and you liked a girl, your guy friends would make fun of you and, you know, all that stuff. And so all that's in the book. And the guy, Pierre Menands, who is apparently buried with this cross, It's actually, I live in the hamlet of North Albany called Menands. And the guy who actually discovered this hamlet, and it's like this old little forgotten Victorian place. If you were ever to go there, Fran, you'd be like, oh my God, I've just been transported to 1890.
Nice.
And his name was Pierre Menands, and he was from Paris. And he came here in like the 1880s or something like that, and he just bought up all this land and created Menands. So that's how that came about. And there is a train trestle down there, and that one crucial scene where they have to run away from the train, that was like my homage to Stephen King. And you know, what's the Stand By Me, you know?
This was so exciting, especially when they played a joke on him at the beginning and broke into his house and scared the daylights out of him.
Yes, that happened.
That was hilarious. That was hilarious, I have to tell you. See, that was something that, you know, practical jokes are cool.
You know how that came about?
That's what I want to know.
Oh, yeah. excuse me. Back, I think we were out of... I think we had, it was like the summer before between it was the definitely the summer between our graduation from junior high and we were about to enter high school, and my best friends were heading off to the public high school. My parents were shipping me off to military school.
Ooh.
So
painful.
So that was that. So I would never really be that close to them again, but we hung out all that summer. And actually it was kind of reversed. The situation was reversed in this case. It was my friend Daly and me. We had just left Twig's house, but you know, and it was getting dark and all this sort of stuff, but we were like, I think it was my idea. I'm like, let's sneak in and scare him. So we snuck in through the kitchen window and like crawled our way upstairs and just went like screamed and like, he like literally like dropped to the floor, like he was, and of course, you know, we laughed our butts off over it, you know, and so, you know, that's, but in the book, like I reverse it so that they play the joke on young Chase. Anyway.
That was hilarious because practical jokes, you know, everybody plays them, but not, you know, like that. But
yeah, I
did with my sister a couple of times because I have a little brother.
Oh, did you?
And he used to, I have a little brother. He tells on us. All the time.
Oh, all the time?
We had to get all the time. Till this day, he tells on me.
Right.
And,
God.
So we sort of got even with him, you know, a couple of times. You know what he didn't do? You know what he did? He got in trouble in school, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, you know, you got to get even once in a while. So, explain how he hears about the cross and why they decide this is even cooler to break into a cemetery. And who's buried there?
Yeah, well.
This is cool.
Yeah, well, like Bailey, like he's like the nefarious one always. He's always got like an angle, you know, like, you know, maybe we could find this crush and make some serious money. And, you know, and he overhears his mother who works somehow, I think, for Menands or whatever. He's got a big store or something like that. And Chase is more the, you know, like the soon to be archaeologist, like, no, if there truly is like this ancient cross and it really does have connections to the final crusade in Jerusalem, we most definitely need to dig it up. But it needs to go to a museum, you know? And so, so they agree to, you know, they agree to do this, but like while Chase's father's away, he's able to steal some of the excavating equipment, and they have no choice but to go to this cemetery, which exists half a mile down the road here, the Albany Rural Cemetery, which is a very famous cemetery. Look it up, people. There's a president, a U.S. president's buried there. I don't think James Fenimore Cooper's buried there, but someone like that is buried there. Mm. It's a very famous cemetery. But anyway, so these guys, like, dig up Pierre Menendez's grave. And they're all freaked out, of course, you know. And then the cops come after him, and that begins the long chase and whatever. And I'm not going to tell you what they find inside the casket and stuff because you got to read the book. But
oh no, you can't. I mean, seriously,
yeah.
It would scare me.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And in fact,
yeah, I mean,
it's you know, this book. This book was really, you know, it's really, you know, it's a short novel, you know, because I wasn't sure how people were going to take even, you know, and you know, and so far people like it. But I just finished a full length Young Chase Baker. That's with my editor now. That'll be out. I'm not sure if that's coming out. I've got like 12 books coming out over the course of the next year and a half. The thing is, I have a book coming out. I have a book coming out in hardcover from Polis in April called The Caretaker's Wife. You'll definitely get a copy of that.
Okay.
And they asked me, you know, they basically asked me to shut down my independent side for the month before and the month after that release. So I definitely have something coming out in January, maybe even February too, but then I have to stop until The Caretaker's Wife comes out. So I'm not sure when the second Young Chase comes out, but this one's great because the second one's great because it's full length and it deals with the Albany Institute of History and Art actually has these two mummies that they've had since the 1920s, and one of them gets stolen, and so Chase has to go on the land, you know, Chase has to go after it, you know, or whatever, and So it's a much larger plot. They go to Egypt and all sorts of stuff like this.
Well, you guys are going to keep me busy in 2019. I mean, I've read three books that are coming out already.
Wow.
I've read them.
I know.
And I just finished one that's coming out in April. And the yours is in April. I just put it on my little thing there to remind myself, April.
Right. Yep.
And then I think
that's a big book.
Coming out with one. That's a big one? Okay,
no.
I can deal with big ones. It's okay because I'm reading one about the Watergate spy, an actual Watergate spy. They just sent it to me.
Oh.
And it's
wow. It's
huge. It's called Dirty Corporate Trickster Spy, the Martin Kelly. Related to the, and they asked me to read it. I go like, okay. It weighs more than I do, for real. So I'm going to
end
that today. Yeah, it's
that's awesome.
My pages, but the font is small. This is what makes me, you know, what can I say? So we've got this cross. So why did they think it had some kind of powers that it possessed? Which is really cool because I like all those crazy things.
Yeah, I do too. I love the supernatural and the occult.
Yeah.
And all that stuff because the cross goes back to the actual Last Crusade, and like the blood of Christ or something like that. And it's, you know, it, you know, I haven't read the book in a while, but it truly is like this cross that's blessed by Christ and has these, you know, mystical powers. And actually it does have, like, Chase gets knocked out at one point and the cross does have this effect on him where he actually finds himself being transported back to the times of the Crusade. And he finds himself like in the midst of this battle while Jerusalem is being besieged by the Muslim hordes. I was able to research that cause, you know, I went to Jerusalem last year or whatever. And so I was able to utilize a lot of what I know about the walls and all that sort of stuff. So I just found that very fascinating. And the dream is very vivid to him. So it's almost like he has been transported back in time. So the cross definitely has mystical powers.
That's what made it even better. But this scene
really
cracked me up. No, seriously. They get to the grave. And
they
have all these things that to open them. They had no idea what the heck they were doing. So they get there.
Right.
They think when they get to the place, they think that there's actually somebody you know, thing in there. So who's supposed
right.
to be in there? And why is it that you have a backhoe and all this stuff? And how did they ever get it open, or didn't they? I was hysterical laughing, go like, oh, my God. I could imagine going to a cemetery and sitting there digging something up. Seriously.
Right. Again, that goes back to I used to know people. Well, first of all, they think that the cross is buried with a body in that grave. That's the whole point. And so they need to excavate that grave and open up the casket and, you know, grab the cross and run. But of course, nothing goes as planned. But when I was a kid, one of the excavators who worked for my dad, what he used to do at night was he used to dig graves. And and they used to do it at night because, you know, during the day, anyway, he used to just do it at night under lamplight, and which makes it even more macabre. And this is a true story. Excuse me. True story. There's another historic cemetery across the river in Troy, which is notoriously haunted. Again, you can look it up. And this guy actually, he would use his backhoe to dig up graves, because oftentimes they need to like dig up old graves and mm-hmm. you know, that are like say a century old and the family's given up on them. And what they used to do is they would dig up the graves and like consolidate the bones into like a small box or something like that. And you know, so yeah, it's a macabre thing. But anyway, so this guy is his name was Tommy Patton, and he was just like this little 5'2" guy with a raspy voice, and he smoked like, you know, cigarettes like crazy, and he dug up these like two caskets, like century old caskets, and it was getting late, so he had to bring him home. And so he stored them in the garage right next to his wife's car. So
oh, God.
She gets up in the morning and walks out, turns on the light in the garage, and there's these two old caskets that sitting right there. And I guess she like fainted or something like that. I don't know. So all this stuff, a lot of this stuff at the Chase Bakers is, you know, these alt ones as well as the YA stuff is as fantastical, if I can use that word, as they seem, and as supernatural and occultish and just plain fun, you know. A lot of it I base on real stuff that's happened, you know, or happened to me. And that's why I do all that traveling, Fran. You know, it's crazy. I did 40,000 miles this year. Yeah.
I mean, seriously, it's like you're never home ever. And, you know, that's how I learn about different places, because I just, you know, take your pictures and put them on my Instagram, not on my little photo
right.
thing there. My niece yeah. went to Amsterdam, so I have all of her pictures. My nephew went to
right.
Japan. This is how I visit the world. This is really cool, seriously. But this
that's
is
right.
like so
And how is your niece doing?
Which one?
Because I know she
all
had
them?
No, I know the one who had trouble in Amsterdam.
Oh, you know what? She came
she
home.
Sick.
She went. Yeah, yeah, she got. What happened was, she's a klutz, like her aunt. So she was fooling
right.
around, whatever, and she fell and she hurt her ankle. And she went
yep.
to Barcelona, and they wouldn't do the X-ray. They wouldn't do anything because they said it was like $400, and she had insurance. But for some
right.
reason, they just gave her an ACE bandage. She went to Amsterdam, and when she got home, she found out she tore all the ligaments and tendons in her
oh.
in her ankle. And
wow.
she's studying to be, she's a EMT, but we're hoping that she, you know, finishes and becomes an EMT paramedic. So she wasn't sure if she broke it, but it was her
right.
painful. So she was
wow.
she was upset. And I said to her, yeah, I said, Casey, you know, she had travel insurance, but from what I understand, that's really nothing. That's like, you know,
it's
baloney.
Yeah.
But what I learned, one of my doctors told me a while ago, he said, if you use your charge card when you're paying to go somewhere like that, he said your charge
right.
card has insurance that you would be able to get the care that you needed. They wouldn't have been able to do that, because then you would have been covered.
Yeah.
So,
you know, it's right. Because and this actually this goes back to the Chase Baker series in a way, because I was thinking of you, because like I wasn't in Italy 2 days and a stalker was after me and found me in bar. And found me in this bar that I actually have written about in Chase Baker and the Godchild. He sucker punched me in this bar after he found me, behind me and sucker punched me and knocked me out a little bit. But they wanted me to go to the hospital, of course, the police. And I refused to go because I'm like, no, because it's going to cost me a couple of grand. You know, you're going to charge me. They're like, oh, no, they won't. And I'm like, nonsense. You know you're going to charge. They're going to charge me. So I didn't go, actually. I did have to go to the dentist, though. But that'll get into a book, you know, of course. But this is the stuff that always happens to me, Fran, always.
I don't know why everybody's picking on poor you. I know how that is.
Jeez, I know.
I know. You know, you said something about junior high school. I have a 12-year-old nephew. I have to ask him. I don't know if he's got a girlfriend because I told him school's more important. And hopefully he listens to his aunt.
That's right.
Yeah, good. I said to him, you know, Kate, it's enough problem that you get in trouble every so often. You know, stay away from
that.
It's not good for you. So
not yet. It's too early.
Not yet, please. We got enough with the older ones.
So
we've got Monique, who I think is, you know, very pushy and hysterically funny.
Right.
And she sort of runs his life. Chase, you're not henpecked, please. Seriously.
Yeah.
So why does she decide to become part of the grave robbing and then the great escape from the sirens and the police? How come she decides to do this? Was she really hot for Chase? Seriously.
I think, you know, she's totally into Chase, you know, and Chase has got to, like, you know, it's at that age where, like, you know, they got to choose between, like, their guy friends or a girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
But secretly the guys think she's hot, too, you know. You know, it's one of those.
Uh-huh.
So they're a little jealous. But, you know, she comes along. And second of all, as a literary thing, you got to have in every Chase book, whether it's the adult Chase or the young adult Chase, you've got to have a love interest. And so I had to work it out because the book would be less rich without a love interest. She, you know, she also offers like an alternating point of view, whereas those guys might be like crazier. She's kind of like the voice of reason and stuff like this. But and it was an opportunity for Chase to get like his first real kiss and stuff like that. You know what I mean? And then, you know, like, she's just like, oh my God, you know, like, you know, well, I don't want to give anything away, but again, she is based upon like my first, like, real love interest from like 1976 or something like that. Totally based on her. But her name was not Monique. But it was a French name. I'll leave it at that.
I didn't have to worry about that. I was the girl that everybody liked because I was smart. That's all I'll say about that. Boyfriend.
You're smart and hot, Fran.
Back then you should have seen me. Now I look so much better. And since I
you
saw
still
you,
are.
I took off all the weight. Now I'm 108 pounds of nothing. I'm so proud of myself. So,
yeah, you're little.
To the Thriller Fest, watch out, people. And I'm going to have
different
colors in my hair. Purple, green, yellow, red, and blue, as soon as my hairdresser decides what colors I'm going to have next week.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I got to get to Thriller Fest this year. I haven't been in a couple of years. I got to get there this year.
Yeah, you have to perk it up, because last year it was okay. I met George Martin, but that was okay. I really, you know, wasn't that excited.
I know. You know what? Last year I thought... I know. I mean, I feel badly because I won the Thriller Award, so I really should be there. But but I thought last year with, and you know, George Martin's just like, oh my God, like if I would give up my left hand just to have like a tenth of his audience. But I just thought it was just so that, you know, with that theme being so different, that it wasn't going to be, you know, like there weren't going to be a whole lot of, you know, Vince Andrew type fans hanging around. You know what I mean? So I thought, like, if there's going to be a year to skip.
About 500 people online, at least.
Okay. Oh, really?
And I was in the middle of the line, yeah, and they said that you can get one autograph. If you want a second one, you get to go to the back of the line.
Wow.
And then, you know me, it didn't matter. I just said, I'm so happy to meet you and everything. And I got the book because my niece asked me to stand there and get his autograph. And I said, would you like me to review your book? And he just looked at me as if I had four heads. And I said, that's what I do. And Kimberly turned around and said, that would be great. She's really great. I said, I'd be more than happy to interview you. And he pointed to some guy that he said he claimed his publicist was in the bathroom, but he was really there. I said, well, you know what?
Uh-huh.
Whatever. You're lost. So.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, he's like an older guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he's older than all of us put together. Not a problem, yes. He is
much
older.
Yeah.
But he was very nice and everything. But you know what? What can I say? You missed out on a great reviewer. That would be me. What can I tell you? So, Monique is great in taste. You don't get whipped, kid. So, and then we talked about now how he, went back in time because it's priceless. So tell us more about this Frenchman and how you made it seem like he was almost real before we find out what happens when we really meet. That was scary, let me tell you.
Yeah. Okay. And suddenly it goes from like this Stephen King Stand By Me-ish adventure to suddenly like the whole gang is like locked in this house. And now it becomes like the, like the gothic, haunted occult book. And of course, like the old films of yesteryear, you got to have like the butler, right? you got to have like the, and I forget what I called him in the book, but you got to have like the guy who like actually took care of Pierre Menands and, ran the whole show. And he's set up this basement crypt that is like supposed to like mimic kind of a medieval torture chamber. Well, it does, and the gang finds themselves chained to this stone wall while this dark black ceremony is being performed on this like granite slab, and it's Pierre Menands' body which is about to be resurrected by the guy who's like his old butler or whatever, and they're gonna create like a zombie or whatever, And of course it's very dramatic or whatever. But in order to do this, they need to sacrifice somebody. So who are they going to choose? Who are they going to sacrifice from the gang? Oh, and of course I'm going to stop right there because you got to read the book. But it's a cool scene, I think. I had fun writing it.
It was very cool. It's very scary. And it would make you never want to go into a haunted house again, ever.
Yeah.
I know. Scary.
Yep.
So
yep.
You can picture the transformation as he's becoming alive or whatever it is. You can almost see what he's going to look like, and you can almost feel the fear in Chase and in them. But they never realize the danger. So how does Bailey react to the lunatics? And what about Twiggs? Because they're so brave, and Chase, well, he's not as brave as they are. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, Twiggs, I think. Twiggs is like freaked out and like passes out or something. I don't know. But then, Bailey wants to fight him.
Right.
Bailey's like the battler. And he was in real life. And he still is. He's a great guy. I don't get to talk to him as much as I'd like to, but he's the battler. He's like, let me at him kind of thing, and here he is just a kid, or whatever. And then, they get really nasty with Monique and Chase being the hero, don't you dare, and take me instead. And that's how that happens.
Well, they were after. But then you say something about a Muslim guy, Saladin, in here?
Oh, Saladin.
Saladin, right.
Right. He led the – he really did lead the when they sacked Jerusalem the final time, Saladin led the charge.
Mm-hmm.
So that's real.
That is
real. He was badass. Yeah.
So what were they going to do if they actually found this thing? What are they going to do with it? I mean, what would they do with
Bailey
it?
Well, Bailey would have originally wanted to sell it for money,
yeah.
But Chase had already told him, no, it belongs not only in a museum, but actually it really belongs in its original place, which is the Cathedral of Notre Dame in Paris. So that's inevitably where it would go. But of course, as it ends and the authorities get involved or something like that, I'm not going to say much else about, you got to read it, but that's where it belongs.
Seriously, you got to read it. So
yeah.
they, no matter how scared they are, no matter what it is, they really aren't that serious. So is Monique, did she ever really get scared? Was she ever in danger? Did she ever say to herself, why in heaven blazes did I do this?
Oh, I think so. Yeah, and I think, and she kind of comes around, like, towards the end, like, she expresses her feelings, going forward with Chase. And I think that's the reason, because when they're in the danger and everything's happening so fast, you don't even realize, if you've ever been in hairy situations before, and I've been in a few of them,
mm-hmm.
It's not until later on where you're like, oh my God, I'm lucky to be alive,
mm-hmm.
And that's always the way, to me, that's like one of the beauties of a really well-written action-adventure book or thriller, where people become more heroic than they ever thought themselves possible. And they're so in the moment and everything's of such singular of purpose, saving their own lives or trying to achieve a goal that they don't realize until afterwards, like, holy crap, we could have been killed, or we came real close to being killed, And so that kind of happens with the kids towards the end of the book, and especially when Chase's father shows back up again and stuff.
Yeah, I know. That's the other thing. I mean, how do you explain to the police and parents, this is what I decided to do today because I decided I needed an adventure. I mean, how do you explain
right.
that? I mean, we all did crazy things. I'm serious. We all did.
Right. Right.
You have to,
because
you have
let's
to,
face
you have
it, like Robin.
A little adventurous, yeah. So what
right.
did he say to his father? I mean, how do you tell your father and your mother, guess what? Today I went to Grave Rob. Please don't be mad at
and,
me.
Yeah, it was,
how do you handle
yeah.
that?
Yeah, and of course he's like, well, first of all, you kids could go to juvenile delinquency, because it's a state and federal offense, you don't just go grave robbing. So what happens to teenagers? They get grounded, of course, and I think he's like, you're grounded for until
forever.
1982. Yeah, like whatever, but of course, what happens with Twigs? He's starving. He needs to eat, so.
Yeah.
So that's the way he was, boy. He was one of those guys that, he just could not gain a pound. It was like, he was one of those guys, the more he ate, the skinnier he got.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always, the stocky guy.
Problem.
And stuff.
Well, I'm skinny, but that's because I can't.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, I don't eat. I can't eat any ice cream or cake or milk or anything. I'm allergic to milk protein. It's a joy, so I never have to worry about eating ice cream or cake or getting fat ever again.
I have that too. I have the lactose intolerance. I don't eat gelato or any of that crap because I can't.
No, I can't.
But you can get good lactose ice cream.
No, it's not even lactose. It's milk protein, so it makes it even worse.
Oh.
And the other day, I decided, and my husband's sitting here, he's cracking up because I decided it was his birthday, so he had a cupcake, and they gave me some strawberry ice cream. Needless to say, never again. And it was good though.
Oh, I
mean, it wasn't that the ice cream wasn't good. It's just my stomach hated me. But you see,
right,
my mother
right,
wouldn't
right.
have grounded me. My mother would have made me write a $1 million word composition on why I wasn't going to do it again. Seriously?
Oh, that's great. That's awesome.
That
I'll have to remember that.
Yeah, she did. Yeah, she was tough. If I didn't get 100 on a test, I had to write the whole thing over. So 99 was not an A. 100
right.
was an
oh
A.
Oh, my God.
But you have another character. I have the book in front of me. Who is Sir Henry? He was evil. Seriously.
Yeah, that's the butler guy.
Yeah, I like
that's the butler. He's the evil butler. Yeah. So,
like,
I pulled out,
people.
Like, yeah, me too. It was, like, you know, I pulled out, like, all those, like, you know, all those, like, old cliches from, like, you know, like the 1940s movies and stuff like that. I mean, that's the original Chase Baker series was, you know, it was originally inspired by, like, those 1930s, 40s, and 50s cliffhanger series. You know, like Indiana Jones, you know, was also inspired by. And I have to I think we're, like, 11 books into it now, but plus the two young adult ones now that add to it. But I have to stay true to that, you know, because that's what Chase Baker's all about. And The Shroud Key, which is the first one in the series, the adult series, still is one of my best-selling books. So I got to stay true to that, like, formula, you know?
I have that. You know something? I didn't realize it. It's staring at me. Did you put the whole thing in the Chase Baker one? Because it says The Shroud Key, novel one. So I don't know if I have the whole – I don't think I have the whole book. I have – 8 chapters. So for those of
is there a sample in there? 8 chapters? Yeah, and
For those of you that get it, you want to get it because you got 8 chapters of The Shroud Key, also.
Yeah.
And that's why I didn't.
Oh, and speaking. That's right. Yes, and The Shroud Key is an awesome book, awesome first in the series. But let me just tell your audience. I need to tell your audience that. Go to the Amazon page for Young Chase Baker and The Cross of the Last Crusade. And if you go today and you live in the States, the UK, and probably Canada, you can get it for free. And so get it for free. Put it on your Kindle.
I'm putting it on my Facebook wall so everybody knows.
All right. And also, I mean, you know, it's Christmas time too. So, and it's a beautiful paperback.
Yeah.
So if you want, I think you can get it for free and get, like, a discount on the paperback. So do that, too. And there's the audio version, which is great. Andrew Werlin did a fantastic job of going from adult Chase Baker to young Chase Baker. So the audio is great as well. He did a really terrific job.
I have the review on my phone, but I'm going on Amazon right now. And I'm going to post it on my Facebook wall because everybody reads what I write for whatever reason.
All right, thank you very much.
I can put it on there after. Yeah, I can put it on. But before I forget, we have time. Tomorrow, hopefully, hold my breath on this one, hopefully, Matt Quayle and Ron Light. On the 20th, Stephen James, Every Wicked Man. On January 3rd, Mark Cameron, Oath of Office. He writes with Clancy. On the 8th, something different. The Begin to Serve Foundation, Pastor Michael Jones is going to be here. We're going to talk about how he helps people. You would love him around the world. Helps, you know, with water and clothes and everything. And he does all these
fairs
in Florida. He's amazing. The 10th, we have Vincent Andrew. I wonder, you know. And on the 14th... we have Bo Wagner, who wrote Network Corrupt, about a corrupt police department. And on the 16th, hopefully we won't have a time thing again. Cindy McDonald will be back with Fiona Quinn. On the 17th, FBI agent Michael Tabman and I are going to take on some of the issues on the news. And I'm going to talk about, because I think it's important, health care, Obamacare, health care. And... we're going to talk about the rising cost of health care.
Oh, yeah. You got quite the you've got a full schedule, Fran.
Yeah,
wow.
In between there, you know, I have no idea. In between there, I'm my niece's homework helper and my nephew's composition writer. among other things. And I told my other niece, you know, you need to get a computer so I don't have to do all the typing, seriously. But I'm getting good at this. So yeah, I ace everything. So
wow.
The ending in this book lets us know. So tell us about the rest of the series and what happens next to Chase. And seriously, if Chase were here, what would he say about this? And if Twiggs really could have read the book, what would he say about it?
If Twiggs had read the book, he would have cracked up, and then he would have reached out with his right hand and like grabbed my head and like put me into a bear lock, you know, like that's what he used to do. He would have loved it. He would have absolutely loved it. He just would have been like, we're famous, you know. I wrote it in Italy last year, and I kept texting him while he was still, you know, and I kept contacting him and, you know, saying like, I'm almost done. He's like, I can't wait. And then like towards the end of December or towards the end of November, he got real sick and he just, that was it. But, you know, but Chase after this adventure realizes, you know, he's like, okay, I'm good at this stuff, you know? And so he very quickly takes on another case, and that's the one, that will be out soon. What is it? Young Chase Baker and, I forget what it's called, but it's not the Mummy's Curse, but it's no. What is it? You know, I try my. It's Young Chase Baker and the Well of the Souls.
Oh wow!
Yes, Young Chase Baker and the Well of the Souls, because they actually go to Egypt and they go to Giza, and they actually find that the Well of the Souls located underneath the Sphinx.
Oh,
and
God.
So it's really exciting. Really, really exciting. And of course there's a whole ton of supernatural stuff that goes on and all this stuff. So get ready for that one. That one's full length. That one's like 300 pages, 60,000 words. And I just, I just got back from Italy. I just finished a 70,000 word novel in what will be a trilogy, called the Tanya Teal Corporate War Chronicles. And the first book is about a company called Everest, which it bills itself as the most consumer-centric online shopping experience ever. And in the near future, they eventually take over everything. Just like there's nothing you buy that doesn't come from Everest. There's just nothing. And you, like even your religion, your politics and whatever, like you do through Everest. And what they do is that in my book, what they're trying to do is get rid of the cash, you know, the actual US dollar bill and transfer that into Amazon credits. And so what they do eventually is they come up with this program called primary membership. And in this primary membership, if you join, you will receive the equivalent of $2,000 Everest credits. And you will, and the tagline for them is like, for the first time ever, you will have a worry-free existence. You will want for nothing.
Oh wow!
You don't have to work. Nothing like that. And the only stipulation is that you must buy Everest products. And if they catch you going against that, they perform something called Everest termination. And you're actually shipped away to these like supermax prisons that are actually fulfillment centers. And how is all this monitored? Well, you know, like
yeah,
that machine Alexa?
Yeah, that's scary.
Well, you know that machine Alexa everybody has now?
Uh-huh.
In my book, it's called by another name, but it's the same type of AI machine. And 10 years from now, like it won't be this cute little device that you say, oh, Alexa, play a song. She will actually know everything about you. Everything you do, like what, and that's what they're working toward. They're literally working towards that now. She will like be able to say like, Fran, you need more toothpaste. Fran, your bank account's getting low. Fran, you usually don't say that type of thing. Why did you say that to that person? Like, this AI monitors everybody.
Oh God.
And like, they can lock down your house. They can like, they can control everybody. So that's what I got into. And like, this company is about to go to war with the last remaining search engine, you know, Google type search engine in the world. And there's like a resistance movement against all this stuff. And so it's turned out to be like this huge, huge book, which I again, one of those books like, and it's a first person female point of view. And again, one of these books that I didn't even know if I could write it, but it just like flew right out of me. And so there's going to be three of them. And the first one will come out in the spring. And this one we're going to do like a huge launch for it. Mega launch.
That's scary. I just finished, believe it or not, Golden Gate by Ben Winters. And it's sort of like that.
How's
it's
that?
Scary.
Yeah.
It was different. That's all I'm going to say. It's coming out next month. I think the 22nd or the 29th or something. I just emailed the publicist to tell her, guess what, I read it in one day, or two was it, two, whatever. It's against the law to lie. And if you don't
see, that's
truth,
the type of book. Right.
It's scary. And
Right. Everything
that you do, you have to write down and you put it in a box at the end of every day. Your stamps, your letters, your notes, and everybody has to keep a day book, and some people actually keep a night book. And in order to do anything, you have to walk around and write down everything you do so that when you die, if somebody dies in this book, they open up the boxes to see their life. And somebody's missing 2 weeks. That's all I'll say. And there's something called the Selector Service. And these people are the ones that can question judges and lawyers and anyone and put anyone they want. They can arrest anyone they want if they lie or they think they lie.
Wow. And that's cool. Yeah. See, it's all like,
oh my
this
God,
is all like,
scary.
Yeah. This is all like that book, like, you know, several other, like Minority Report, you know, like it's sort of Philip Dick inspired, you know? I think mine in any case is sort of like The Man in the High Castle meets, you know, Minority Report or something like that, you know. But tell you what, I will give you, when it's finally finished, I have to go through the manuscript copy again, and after it's edited, I will send you a beta copy before it's published.
That's good. That's good, because people that ask my opinions, what can I say? I did that for someone, I won't say who. And I read the book, and I'm saying, you have like five novels in here. And the book was not good at all. The first 250 pages would have been enough for the book. Then all of a sudden it changes, and the characters in the first part don't wind up in the second part. And then I said, I get what the book was about, because I never not get anything. But I said, God, I felt so bad. And I just said, this is what I think. And I don't think he's speaking to me anymore. But you know what? People want my opinion. Yeah, seriously. I never wrote anything nasty, and I never said anything bad. But hey, listen. So.
Yeah.
Monique.
Well, no. I mean, I'm not going to give you a beta read. I'm going to be giving you like an ARC is what I mean.
Read it.
Yeah, I'm just giving you an ARC.
Don't worry about it, people. I love it. I've got so
you love everything I do,
Fran. If I didn't, you would know, because I'm going to tell everybody very honestly. I got a book
a couple
of weeks ago. and I read half of it, and it was the first time in a long time that I told the publicist I was going to pass.
Really?
I passed because the novel had a point, and the point of the novel was for this person to go and do something. And the rest of the book had nothing to do with what the person was going to do. So I said, rather than write down that it was disjointed, because I think after reading a couple of thousand books, I have an idea. I just said, I'm going to pass on this one, because I don't want to write anything that wasn't right. Some people thought it was great. I personally thought he could have done a better job, and he lost track of what he was doing. But, you know, if you want to know what to get for Christmas and belated Hanukkah, you know, just take the Chase Baker series and start from the beginning. And then I just went on Amazon. I mean, you've got more books than anybody. I just posted half of them on my Facebook wall so that everybody knows. And if you want to read Wrong Light by Matt Coyle, it's phenomenal. Pre-order all of Vincent's books, the Caretaker book. I would seriously do that. Daniel Palmer just emailed me. He's going to ask St. Martin's to set up an interview because Saving Megan is based on a true story, and it is scary. What happens when a mother appears to want her daughter to be sick? Does she have Munchausen syndrome, or is there something else that's behind it?
I tried it.
Oh, my God. It was scary. This poor little girl doesn't know where to turn, and you think that the mother is crazy, but I'm not going to tell you why it happened. There was one kid thing that the kid found out. So, in the series, what if I were to read the next book in the series, what would it be? Because I've got a whole bunch of people that is, you know, my niece is a reader. Penelope loves to read. She's going to be 11 going on 75, I think. And,
in the Chase Baker series?
Yeah. What's next? What's the second in the Chase Baker series? Because, you know, we said, what is next for the adventure? And is Monique in this one?
The next YA Chase Baker, the next young Chase Baker won't come out. Well, I'm not sure if it comes out this fall or this spring, or late winter, something like that. But until then, even young adults, even the adult Chase Baker is fine for young adults. Like, so start with the Shroud Key. Go to Godchild, then I think it's Chase Baker and the Golden Condor. All of them are fine for – I have a lot of – those books have a lot of teenage fans. You know, you're not going to get any kind of like heavy stuff or any, you know, like heavy sexual stuff or anything like that. You know, there's always a love interest and a new love interest, but it's more like, you know, Indiana Jones type stuff. So, you know, it's PG-13.
That's okay. That is
really
okay.
Sure.
So
yeah.
Before we end, we have about 5 minutes. If they were to explain themselves to their parents and their police, what would they say in order to get out of being punished? I mean, poor Chase is hungry, and he made me hungry by the time I ate this. And all I was able to eat was, you know, tuna fish not even on a roll, just plain tuna fish. That can't kill your stomach too badly, no. I personally would rather have an ice cream cone, but we both know that's never going to happen again. So how would they talk the parents out of punishing them? I mean, because they're pretty clever. And then he told his father, I'm starving. And it's basically, if he really wanted to punish him, he would just say, too bad. That's what my
too bad, go
said.
Home. Because...
Yeah, too bad.
You know, because because even though technically speaking, what they did was wrong, you don't go around... you know, grave digging. But what they did was they tried to right what they thought was a big wrong. You know, like you don't bury a cross that's already been stolen. You know, like you try to find it and you try to, you know, give it back to the people it belongs to. So what they did was their motives were righteous. And so like, all right, let's go get something to eat. you know, that's probably the way I handle it as a parent too. But on the other hand, you have to, you kids could have gotten yourself killed and or arrested or both.
I don't even think they even thought about that at one point. I mean, they didn't even think about that. You know, am I going to get in trouble? This is too much fun. And they just went and did it. And,
What do a lot of teenagers do?
Tell me about it. But which is really why the lesson learned is think about your consequences before you do them, which is what I explained to my students for 1,000 years. And I said, you know, before you decide to get me annoyed, which they very rarely did because that was not a wise thing to get me angry, think about the fact that I'm not going to let you get away with it ever. I'm not going to cut you some slack. And
right.
being on my good side is a whole lot better than getting on my bad side, because my rewards were great. I mean,
right.
seriously. I mean,
absolutely.
Did you ever try with, I know, seriously, I had like, you know, 500 kids in the lunchroom, and you get to try to keep 500 kids quiet. And I said, every class that no one gets in trouble gets a treat at the end of the month. My luck, 24 classes, nobody got in trouble.
Awesome. That's great.
And that was like hilarious. But yeah.
Get a reward.
You need to pay for your consequences, and sometimes they don't realize it until it's too late. So where can everybody find out about your 10 million books? And I'm so excited. We're going to do another show, everybody, on January 10th at 10 o'clock. We're going to talk
yes.
about whatever book he sends me. We're not telling you
yep.
what. It's in my schedule already. It's on my thing there, so don't worry about it.
All right. VincentZandry.com. My website is I totally apologize for my website. It totally needs to – this in 2019 is going to be revamped. But anyway, for now, go to www.vincentzandry.com, and you can access my blog there and all my books. There's, you know, news of upcoming events and stuff like that. And I think if I get the time, I'm going to be updating it this week. But just go to VincentZandry.com. You can't miss.
Well, they won't miss it, because I have all of it on my Facebook wall. If I could find what I do with it, yeah. I posted just about everything just now everywhere.
Oh,
and
thanks.
I just posted the link. I'm just looking. I don't know why. I just posted the link, and I'm going to repost it on my Facebook wall so that everybody knows to listen. And
okay.
This is where they have it. And I hope this
Great.
Time you get to come to the Thriller Fest. And if you're ever up my way in Westchester, let me know. But that's not a
I will, hon. I'll be in town very soon. I'm doing a noir at the bar, I think, in a couple of months. And also, there's a new Dick Moonlight coming out this year, too. First full length since
when,
I won the
When is that coming?
Thriller
I love
Award
Dick Moonlight.
For Moonlight Weeps. I think that'll be probably this summer. It's called In the
okay.
End, Moonlight Kills. And
oh, good.
It's got like a shocking ending. So I just finished those two while I was in Italy. So they both need rewrites, so I have to do that. So I would say the new Moonlight will be out this summer.
Well, if all goes well and I get 5 minutes away from reviewing books, which doesn't happen,
yeah.
and from my radio show, I have one more story to write in my Faces Behind the Stone series, and everybody knows my characters are all dead.
That's
they're all
great.
Dead. They uh-huh. Yeah, they're dead, and they tell you why they're behind the stone. In this particular book, some people got there because some people did something wrong to them. In the other story, somebody did something right, you know, really wrong, and they deserve to be there. After
right.
reading Golden Gate, I realized the premise for my last story is going to be, what about a world where people are told to lie and they get in trouble if they tell the truth?
Oh, that's so great.
That should be my next whatever.
The
hopefully
converse.
I'll
yeah,
write
that's...
it. Yeah, hopefully I'll write it this week and send it to my editor. And then
right.
I won't say which one. One of the publishers, traditional publishers that publishes, I don't know if he's small print or whatever, said he would read it. He doesn't mean he's going
oh,
to take
great.
It, but he said he's going to read it. Yeah. It's very hard to get to St. Martin's Press or Polaris or any one of them. It's
right.
hard. Even though
yeah.
I work with everybody and they all know me, but we'll see.
I know.
Thank you.
It doesn't mean anything anymore. I mean, I'm close to,
yeah.
I'm close to like having sold 1 million books and like, you know, I've won all
yeah,
the awards and all that stuff. And it's still difficult, you know, like that's why I really push out and push my independent list, because first of all, I make much more money with it, but
mm-hmm.
the industry's, you know, we can talk on January 10th. Maybe we'll block out some time to talk about industry changes.
I'm going to put that in my phone right now.
Yeah,
seriously?
Because I'm also working on a book called.
I have my notepad.
I'm working on a book called Rich Writer, Poor Writer. And I've been blogging some of it, and there's been a very good response to it, and it deals with some of the industry changes that are, you know, happening rapidly.
Okay, it's in my phone.
Yeah, we'll talk about the industry. Great.
Yeah, a lot of people are talking about that things are not the same, that it is changing, and that even getting royalties. I mean, my last book, A Daughter's Promise, has been selling quite a bit. So when I asked the publisher how come I didn't get any royalties, no one bought it. I go, but that's not true, because people are buying it, and I'm getting royalties on Amazon from Kindle, and it doesn't make sense, and people are buying the paperback.
Right.
And they're telling me if I buy it, and I buy it at whatever, that why shouldn't I get royalties if I buy my own book? How do you know I bought it? How do you even know I bought it?
Right. Right. Yeah.
Well, anyway.
Yeah. There's things are changing fast.
Well, I have that in my thing, and I'm so excited. And thank you so much, everybody. It's a beautiful day outside.
Thanks for having me, friend.
Thanks for coming on. Okay, everybody, have a nice day, and bye.
Thanks, friend. Bye.